This time, I'd like to now call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect, the time is 11:11. The day today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2005. I'll help Ellen out on this one. Let the record reflect that Representative Thomas, Guerra, Gatto, and myself, Representative Newman, or Chair Newman, are here. We do have a quorum to conduct business today. Representative Lynn has been excused. Hopefully we can get our other committee members here shortly. I believe they're around. Today we'll be hearing HB 13, school construction bond reimbursement, and then 128, which is a Alaska School Physical Activity Task Force, in that order. And here comes Representative Salmon for the record. We have with us this afternoon, or this morning, Representative Gatto, who's going to be presenting 13. Representative Gatto, I guess you can either do it from where you're at or come around in front. That's your choice. Please state your name and record, and let's get on with it.
Well, we'll go front.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. HB 13 is a way for urban districts to finance school construction. I'm going to be very brief because we have people in the audience here who will be speaking who are intimately involved with the Matthew School District and will be able to relay information to you in addition to the information I give. But we do have a shortage of space in the Matsu, and we have a shortage of space in some other places, including Anchorage, as schools deteriorate and need replacement. And all this bill does is allow us to, as it has in the past, allow us to build schools with a 70-30 split in the money, with the state supplying 70% and the districts, the homeowners, and the residents of an area supplying 30%. If there are some questions, I'll be happy to entertain them now.
Do we have any questions for Representative Gatto from our committee?
Just a comment.
Representative Sam or Thomas?
Hey, okay.
Thomas.
Just label, just label on you.
Yeah. It's okay. We're both Davenir.
You're very, very well distinguished people.
You said urban. Also, you know, I am from Haines, and we are somewhat more rural, but we're an organized municipality, and we qualified for this. So just, I think it's...
Meyer, sir, certainly, I've used the term loosely, organized areas would qualify. In fact, I don't know any areas that wouldn't qualify. It's just that many areas get 100%, and they're certainly not going to apply for 70%. So I suppose it's open to everyone in the state. If anyone wants to apply, they're certainly welcome to. And the state is here to not only provide funding for the day-to-day activities in the classroom, but also to make sure that we have a safe environment for the students.
Representative Gatto.
No tough questions, sir.
Here it comes. There's a lot of schools out there with needs of repairs to their buildings and stuff. Is this just a new school bond, or is this can this be used also to use for repairs and maintenance?
Well, I don't think it covers routine repair and maintenance, but very often you have a situation where it requires virtually a term called reconstruction, and it would apply to a situation like that. Major overhaul or major maintenance when you have to replace a roof is not usually considered under routine maintenance, and I think it would apply to those areas.
Good. I wanted that for the record because there is quite a few districts in the state that are in need of repair, and I want to make them aware that there is a mechanism in HB 13 that will help them achieve those goals. Any other questions for Mr. Representative Gatto?
Chair?
Yes, Representative Garrett.
Thank you. We discussed when this came up earlier that, of course, this is something that the wealthier districts in the state can take advantage of, the urban districts generally. But since much of the rural community doesn't do matching bond contributions, we usually fund those schools through an appropriation and going through the major maintenance list. And I guess I guess I would like a commitment from the sponsor that if we're going to push for school construction in places that need it, a commitment that will also treat the rural districts that can't benefit from this bill also as fairly when we go through the budget process. And I'm wondering if you view this as a global sort of way to help all the school districts and this is being part of the effort, or if you wouldn't be supportive of also funding rural district construction and maintenance.
As you know, we had the 70-30 construction issue. It expired the first of this year. Some districts didn't have bonding available or simply didn't put bonding out at the time. What this does is it extends the old bill to, I think, to July 1st of 06, gives them an opportunity to at least put bonding out there. The important part of this bill is that you have to get a commitment from your community to fund 30%. And I don't know that this bill would apply to the 100%. Although I don't think it's even 100. I think it's 98. Doesn't a rural district actually cough up some money for school construction?
I have no idea.
I believe so. And maybe when Mr. Jeans is going to be testifying on this bill too, and maybe Representative Guerra can propose some of these questions, he'll be probably a little more informative.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Guerra.
I guess this bill only applies to the school districts that have a tax base that bond. It doesn't apply to the REAAs. It doesn't apply to the smaller communities that don't bond. And I guess, frankly, my brass tacks question is, if I feel that we're not going to be supportive to the Bush communities and help them with their maintenance and construction problems, I think I'll end up fighting this. I think all of the school districts need help in this area, and I'm not going to get into a regional war where we're trying to do something for our own districts but not for other people's districts. So what I was really looking for was a commitment that we could all work together to also help get through the maintenance and construction list for those schools that aren't going to benefit from this bill.
You want a commitment from me that says I'm willing to work? Of course. I don't have a problem giving a commitment like that. But this bill simply says anybody who wants to apply, I don't think it says only certain districts can apply, but anyone who wants to apply certainly can.
Mr. Chair, just a final comment. Anybody who wants to apply, but the truth is that the small, rural, and REA districts don't apply and can't apply. So they might want to, but they can't. I'll support this as long as I feel like there's going to be support for the rural districts as well when that time comes.
Might I add to Representative Guerra, maybe these are some questions we can ask of Mr. Jeans of just how we can do this. Obviously, this committee realizes, you know, last year we had over $641 million in deferred maintenance. A lot of that in rural Alaska, you know, that does need to be addressed. And maybe he can provide us with a way where we can come up with a mechanism where we can address these people, because obviously they do have limited means to pay these. So we'll ask him about that, and we'll work forward on that. That's a commitment from this committee.
May I?
Representative Thomas.
Yes, again, pointing out that the Haines Borough just recently went through an election, and for them to bond, and it's going to cost them 2.67 mils that they're willing to put on their mill rate already to build a new school. And so they're in, depends on what definition, they're under 7,000 under the federal rule. They are rural because they are an organized municipality. I'm going to say they're pretty gutsy to go and borrow 20 million. I guess they're going to borrow like 17 or 16 because the state will, they're under the old plan, 70-30. And are willing to do that. And that's pretty stiff if you're a businessman to put that kind of money onto your business and then fund the school, but it did pass. So little towns are willing to do it, but at a big expense, because all the schools, see, three of the schools are ready to fall down, and it's a $20 million. You talk about capital reconstruction or money, it's $20 million to rebuild them. So it's cheaper to build a new one than it is to replace them or remodel the old ones.
Thank you.
They have no economy.
Yes, we have Representative Gutenberg would like to...
Gruenberg
would like... I knew that. He sits right in front of me. You goofed me up. Gruenberg would like to have some comment on this. This is also, his name is on this bill. And let's hear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm very sensitive, and I've made commitments to the Bush caucus that we want to help with them, too. And I was talking with Senator Hoffman, and he presented me with a bill that had been introduced previously to deal with, on a long-term basis, setting up a corporation to provide for school construction in the Bush. And it's a very complicated bill. I don't know anything about it, and the attorneys who have been involved in drafting this have not been available. And I'm waiting to hear from them, but I'd like to move our bill forward with still keeping at least my commitment. I can't speak on behalf of my co-prime sponsor here, but I am committed to helping the Bush. And but I'm afraid if we just delay this, then the train won't move down the track. And I just don't know enough about that other bill. I'm delighted to talk with members of the caucus or whatever, but it's a very complicated bill, and I wanted that on the record.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gruenberg. Do we have any questions?
Dorfman, before that it was Greening and got it.
Got
him. Yeah, right. Well,
how about my friend Max? Do we have any more questions for these two gentlemen?
And once again, I appreciate all of you doing this, hearing this bill. It's really important, and Clark Middle School in my district is definitely affected, so I have an oar on the boat.
Fantastic. Do we have any more questions for these gentlemen from the committee? Thank you, sirs. Now we're going to go to some testimony, starting with Mr. Eddie Jeans. Eddie, were you going to talk about this? I know we have some questions for you, some new ones.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance. I've already testified on this bill and the department's position on this particular piece of legislation, but I would be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Mr. Jeans, some of the questions that were just raised here recently, you heard them. Could you try and help us out with some mechanisms or a way where we could address the needs of rural Alaska to not only to the building of new schools that need replacement, but also the repair? Can you give us some suggestions on how to get to that point?
Mr. Chairman, the mechanism's already in place. The department has a process where we evaluate school districts' new construction and major maintenance request, and we put those into a priority for the legislature to consider. So on the department's webpage, we have the school construction list as well as the major maintenance list. And then you may be aware the governor has recommended in his budget that the first 20 projects on the major maintenance be funded this session. I believe that's about $25 million. But the process is there, and the list is there, and it's up to the legislature to consider those requests.
And you mentioned the first 20 there. How many of those are in rural Alaska out of that 20? Do you know offhand?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we've seen it. We should all know.
I don't like the – I have difficulty with the definition of rural. The first project on there is Yakutat City Borough, but many people would consider Yakutat rural. So, at the Department of Education, we like to refer to them as municipal school districts and then the unorganized boroughs.
I'm sure that information is in all of our offices if we dig a little deeper and have our staff look into that. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Eddie, can you help me with this? The major maintenance list, does that just include the schools that can be bonded for under a bill like this? Is it a list of schools from districts that can't bond?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, it's any school district, and in fact, Anchorage has a number of projects on that list as well. So it's up to the school districts to apply. So first they have to apply, and then we go through our prioritization process and prioritize the district's requests based on need.
Representative Guerra.
Can you help me through this one? In 2002, when we passed the last big bonding proposal, and that included a state bond for rural districts, included a match for the districts that contributed. On the stuff, let's say, that Anchorage funded through its 30% match, would those have been schools that are also on the major maintenance list? So some of those, or are the schools that are on the major maintenance list the ones that end up not being bonded through the local match program?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, on the 2002 statewide GO bond list of schools, there was one project from the Anchorage School District. I believe it was Windler Middle School. The rest of those were REA school districts. At the same time that GO bond package was approved by the voters, the debt reimbursement program opened up available to all municipalities. There was also included in that piece of legislation for the 2 years that the debt reimbursement program was open, that the grant program was closed to municipal school districts because the debt program was available to them. That has since sunsetted, so the two lists that the department compiled this year include both REAs and municipal school districts.
Any more questions for Mr. Jeans today? Mr. Chair. One more for Representative Garrett.
Thanks. And when we talk about the distinction between REA districts and the municipal school districts, are the non-REA districts, or should we all, they all have the ability to bond? Whether or not they do bond is another thing, but they all have the ability to bond. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, they have the ability to bond. They may not necessarily have the capacity to bond.
Some of the non-REA school districts don't have the capacity to bond?
In some cases, you get into the very small communities, municipal communities. They may not have the capacity.
Okay. And just for clarity, Mr. Jeans, could you identify what REAA stands for everybody in the audience?
REAA stands for Regional Education Attendance Area.
Representative Salmon.
Yeah, the question I have for Mr. Chairman, to Eddie, sorry about forgetting your last name, but
Eddie Jean.
How does this bill affect the priority list of the school construction?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, it doesn't affect the school construction list or the major maintenance list, other than if this bill was to pass, those municipalities that have projects on those lists could go back to their voters, get approval, and then bond for those projects that are currently on our list. But this doesn't necessarily deal directly with the list itself.
Representative Salmon.
Maybe would that take money away from this list here? Or would that kind of clear up the idea of what I'm trying to get at?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, the two different programs require separate appropriations. So going into the 07 budget, we're requesting $86 million to fund the debt reimbursement program. For fiscal year 06, that's a state share. And as I mentioned earlier, the governor has requested, I believe it's $28 million for the first 20 lists or 20 projects on the major maintenance list.
Any more questions from this committee for Mr. Jeans? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have No online testimony today, I don't believe. So we're going to come with our in-audience. Let's start with Kim Floyd, who's the public information officer for the Mat-Su Borough. But if you'd please state your name and who you represent.
Thank you, Representative Newman. My name is Kim Floyd. For the record, I am the public information specialist for the Mat-Su Borough School District. And I want to thank you for having me here today. This is quite exciting for me to be here in person. I've done a lot of testifying over the years, but over the phone from LIOs in my office, and it's a pleasure to see everyone this morning. We have a school on the Deeds priority list for school construction. It's number 31, and it's $440 million that the state would have to invest before we get to that school. That school is needed 3 years ago. We have a growth, average annual growth rate in our district of approximately 7%, 500 to 600 new kids every year. Just since count, we've had three.
What school is that?
Mat-Su Borough School District. Oh, it's Settlers Bay Elementary School is the school we hope to build, and that would relieve overcrowding in the Kinnick Goose Bay area, which currently has just two schools serving the residents. That area, the Kinnick Goose Bay area, is the fastest growing area in the state of Alaska right now. Again, our school is number 31 on the deed priority list, $440 million before we get there. We need some relief. We're asking for help. I do hope that HB 13 can pass out of this committee today so that the conversation can continue. We are not trying to, by any means, create a regional debate. The reality is with 500 to 600 kids new to our district every year, it's the equivalent of a new elementary school. We've had 300 new kids just since the count period ended. They're coming both from in the state and from out of the state. As you can imagine, this is creating great strain on our existing facilities. Currently, we have 52 portable classrooms in use throughout our district. Approximately 12% of our students are educated in portable classrooms. They're fine for a temporary stopgap measure, but they certainly aren't a long-term investment in infrastructure. Those schools will still be needed 30 years down the road, and portables certainly don't have that type of lifespan.
And they have a cost of how much per portable?
$70,000 per portable to build and install. Then, of course, you have the additional heating and electricity, which is not quite as efficient as it is in a regular brick-and-mortar building.
They're mostly electric heat, right?
Yes. Also, they don't have facilities, so we're asking children to leave those classrooms, mostly unattended, to go into the building to use the facilities. That's not something that we want to continue. We do have a comprehensive 20-year facility plan. We update our six-year plan that we turn into deed every year, and we are very active working with developers in our community to make sure that we're on target with what our needs are, that we're planning for schools in the right areas. We're also trying to be very creative to keep the costs of construction down. That means working with developers to talk about land set-asides for schools. We're talking with them about how much land even we need for schools. So we are trying to do things to be the most efficient. We've been, again, as I mentioned the last time I testified, we feel we've been extremely good stewards with the bonding projects. We realized there wasn't a cap this last round, but we did not treat it as an open checkbook. We expect to continue to be good stewards with that program, again, only asking for that which we need. We don't want to have to turn to double shifting, year-round school, or some of the other drastic alternatives that we certainly will be facing within 3 years if we don't do something. And so again, I respectfully request that you pass out HB 13 so that the conversation can continue about how to help all of the students in the state.
Thank you, Kim. And I know that I've had frequent conversations with you on this topic, but maybe you could explain to some of the other committee members here, like Representative Salmon, just the process that you go through to make sure that you're ready if HB 13 passes. And the bonds that take place, the process that we go through to ensure that that's done, and what the Mat-Su Borough has done. And maybe that will help Representative Salmon understand a little bit what we need to do, what we can do to help his community.
We have a six-year subplan that we turn into the state to look at our capital infrastructure needs. Based on that priority list, it's much like Deed's priority list, we would put together a bond package and forward that to our borough assembly. There, it's a first approval process by the school board, then it moves to the borough assembly. They, too, then take a look at the needs, analyze those. They may repackage what we've given them, and then they approve an initiative for the ballot. Once that passes, we are looking at about 4 years before the school actually opens from the time the bonds pass. Now, that means that were we to bond this fall successfully, we would not be opening our new schools, which, again, we could have used 3 years ago, you know, when we have been building schools. So we're looking at 2009. So, again, even with capital construction, we are going to be needing some short-term solutions. Portables are a piece of that, but they're certainly not the best answer.
And how many schools are over capacity right now in Umatsu Borough out of how many?
That's a good question. We have 36 schools in our district, 17 elementary schools. Of those, the majority are in the Palmer-Wasilla area, and there is not a single empty classroom. Even with increased operating monies, we could not lower class sizes if we wanted to, unless we stacked desks on top of each other. So we're really at a critical point where we're going to be looking at options that aren't acceptable to parents, they don't meet our community expectations for quality education, and that is not something. We've been moving forward. Last year, the funding the legislature appropriated helped us reduce class sizes at the kindergarten level. We would like to maintain that level without having to talk about increases.
Good, good. And now we've been growing at, what, almost 500 kids a year in America?
500 to 600 students, average annual growth about 7%.
And that's expected to grow for how long? Who knows?
Population forecasts say that within 30 years we will be bigger than Anchorage. There's no foreseeable relief to growth. And we have some growing pains in our community and how we're dealing with that. But all of that aside, the conversation about how we will deal with providing infrastructure so our students have safe and effective learning environments is number one in my mind.
Thank you. And for the record, we have been joined by the lovely Representative Wilson. Do we have any questions for Ms. Floyd? Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Did you say you went under the last bond issue and applied for schools?
Not this past fall. We did the fall prior to that. We passed $56 million in bonds.
So why didn't you apply on the last one if you need a school a year?
Yeah, well, you have a plan. As I mentioned before, we have growing pains, and they're incredibly difficult to deal with. Last year, at election time, we were faced with a 13% increase in assessed valuations. People's property taxes were shooting through the roof. That's our only source of revenue in our community for borough operations or to payment on bond dollars, on bond debt. We were faced with a sales tax, 1% borough-wide, that was going down in flames. We were also having great discussion over real estate transfer fees and gravel extraction taxes. And the environment was very much anti-increase taxation. We try very hard to make sure that we are in communication with all stakeholders in our community, and that the belief at that time was it was not a good idea in that environment to go forth with a school bond. We tend to be a little reactive in our community. We're learning to grow up. And we weren't quite at the crisis point that people felt that those bonds could have been successful in that environment. We're there now. We're at the precipice. We're going over. And so we feel we did do a survey this past fall. We asked residents how they felt about an $80 million bond package, which would include three elementary schools and a high school, all needed projects. With the 70-30 bond debt reimbursement, we had a 75% support without any legwork on our part. People know we've reached that edge again, and they will. 75% on a survey for, you know, bonding is incredible. It's unheard of. And so, again, I think our community's ready, and we would appreciate an extension and an opportunity to address our students' needs.
Representative Pato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the opening of the new hospital scheduled for early next year, maybe even January, that number of new employees and all the downstream employees included in the population growth prediction?
Yes. Along with the retail boom that we're experiencing, as you may have read, I know you're keeping track of local issues, a new Walmart, the biggest Walmart in the state, is going to be located just outside the city of Palmer. As we meet with developers, it's almost staggering to sit around the table and listen to the conversation about what is going to hit our community just in terms of residential housing in the next 10 years. It's talk of 600 homes here, 400 homes here. Oh, by the way, right down the street from your elementary school, I'm building 140 apartments for a school that already is bursting at the seams. This is, from a school district standpoint, this is a very...
Representative Thomas has a question here.
Yeah, a lot of times when you're developing at that rate, or if you're asking them to come in, you give forgiveness taxes. Are you doing this at this level, or do you have to tell them, no, we're not going to do that in order to pay off our schools?
We're trying very hard to, again, we're meeting with our developers. We have our next committee meeting in March to talk about ways we can work together, look at other model communities, how have they dealt with growth, what incentives were there for residential developers to set aside land, to donate it back to the district. We know that they're hearing us. We had, for example, one of our major developers in our community who has 80 acres in an area we're hoping to put a school, approach the borough and say, how much land do they need? And the borough said 40 acres. Well, to a man who is going to develop on 80 acres, that's half of his profit. So we backed off. But that's why we're also having the conversation about how much land do we need for a school. Anchorage builds schools on smaller plots than do we. Part of that is just availability of space. But we feel there's a very valuable public-private partnership that needs to happen. We're going to lead out on that, take that to the borough, and hope that they act on our recommendations.
So the answer is?
Yes. we're looking at ways to.
No, but I mean, do you forgive the Walmarts 5% of the?
No.
No, but that's part of the that's part of what we're looking at. I mean, this is
do it now then. Okay.
That was a no.
Yeah, that was a no. Sorry. I misunderstood your question. Sorry.
All right, and just a little bit I might add, too, you know, property taxes in the Mansfield Borough have rose over 40% in the last 3 years, with another expected of almost 13% increase this year. And the folks there are still willing by 75% to support this bond. So I'd just like to express to the committee there is a lot of support in the Mansfield. They do recognize this need. Representative Gatto?
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. We do have a Votech High School that's in the works.
Mm-hmm.
Does that have anything to do with the need for additional funds, or is that already taken care of?
That was a part of our last bond package that we passed. We have a career and tech ed high school, much like the Martin Luther King Center. We also have an elementary school that will open in fall of 2006, and that will already be filled to the brim by the time it opens. It will deal with the overcrowding at Larson Elementary School, which is the largest elementary school in our district, designed for 488, houses 668. When that school opened 4 years ago, it was already filled. So again, we're still in a reactive mode. Even though we're trying to plan, there are other growing pains that play into how we address our growth. So we do have some new schools opening, but they'll be at the max by the time that happens.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chairman. do you think we could work it out so that some of those kids could come
to
Wrangell?
Maybe.
I can't imagine what that kind of a problem would be. And I probably don't even want to think that maybe that's a better problem, but you know we're losing, and we've
right.
lost so many teachers and so many programs and everything, and so it's almost hard for me to even think about what it would be like to be gaining at that huge amount. It's mind-boggling.
It's overwhelming. We realize that we're in a very different position than most districts in the state, and we're sensitive to that. We are trying to address it as best possible. But we're really at the point where we need help.
Yeah. Actually, I've got seven different school districts in my district.
Wow.
And every one of them are losing, you know, you have more than that probably, but to me that's a lot.
They're all moving to Mattsuit.
Well, you know, that's interesting. We're going to talk about, you know, starting to survey when people enroll their children in our school, where they're coming from. Right after Christmas break at Goose Bay Elementary, which is the school I spoke to that is in serious need of some relief, right after Christmas break, they had 10 students enroll the week after. So I asked the principal, do you know where they're from? All different families out of state. So they're not just coming from within our state. And so it begs to question, you know, what's happening. We need to keep a close eye on that.
And also I might add, too, that I think it's good that the Mattsuit Borough School District recognized the need for a vocational school there to address some of the issues that are coming forward in Alaska with resource development and making sure that we're putting Alaskans to work in Alaska. And I really applaud that effort.
Well, we have some of the most highly recognized career and technical education programs in the nation. They're model programs. Our welding program, it's a district-wide program, but it's housed at Colony High School. It will be the just-in-time training location, not only for youth workers, but for adults in our community. And so we want to keep our students here. We want to keep our adults here. We're going to provide the regional training center.
Representative Gatto.
The comment, I guess the top six welding students all came from one school in the valley. Obviously, there's something that's happening well there. Number two, a couple of other comments. Not only are we growing kids, but look at what will happen to the need for police and fire protection. Look what will happen to the need for medical care. Look what will happen to a lot of other issues that are causing pretty severe expenses in the Mattsuit Valley. Growing pains is a gentle way of describing what the residents have to look forward to there.
I would agree.
Any more questions for Kim? Thanks, Kim.
Thank you so much.
And she's easy to contact. If you'd like to talk to her more, I'll make sure to get your number. Mary Francis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Mary Francis, Executive Director of the School Administrators Association. There are schools all over the state in need of construction and major maintenance. Our association supports the continuation of the debt reimbursement program. We have a resolution that speaks to the importance of fully funding previously approved bonds as well as continuation of the program as HB 13 does. As you know, we've had many years of pretty minimal funding for school construction and major maintenance, and it's created a huge need statewide. I recall when I was a superintendent having a project on the state department's list for a number of years. Finally, when it surfaced to number two or three statewide was that year that Mr. Jeans referred to, when all of a sudden municipalities were not included in the program. And that community has subsequently bonded, and so because of this huge need, you have municipalities now that are willing to kick in their share at 30% and 40%, and so we would very much support this legislation and hope that it passes out of committee.
Thank you, Mary. Do we have any questions? Representative Guerra?
Thanks, Ms. Francis. Does your organization have a position on, apart from this bill, on a proposal for how much we should fund to get through the major maintenance and construction list?
Well, we support following the department's list, always have. We feel that the process by which people apply for placement on the department's list is very thorough. Having gotten projects on that list, I know what goes into it. So we support that. We also support obviously funding for all schools and all school districts in the state.
And your organization might not have a proposal on this, but do you have a proposal on how far through the list we should try to go this year? What would be equitable?
We haven't actually addressed that yet, no.
Thank you.
I'm not sure we would.
Yep.
We support them all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good to hear we got something good, huh?
something, right?
Representative Gatto?
Early on, you mentioned full funding of existing bonding. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think there, some of my members, some of the school districts were concerned that there might not, that there would be a reneging on
the percent?
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify, did you mean full funding to pay the 70%?
Yeah.
Or full funding to go to 100%?
No. Full funding of what was previously approved bonding.
Thank you.
I believe that was incorporated into HB 30.
Right.
Any more questions for this committee? Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much.
There's no one else to testify here, I believe. Do we have any objections to pass this bill from committee? I'll entertain a...
Mr. Speaker? A speaker? No, Mr. Chairman. Guys, stop me going on this. This is contagious.
We're working that way.
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 13 version F with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
I hear no objections from this committee. This bill is passed from this committee. Now I would like to entertain a motion to move HB 128 before this committee so we can talk about it a little bit. Representative Wilson moves that we hear that. Please tell us about the bill, Ms. Shalon Szymanski.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shalon Szymanski, and I'm staff to Representative Liesl McGuire. And I have with me today Emily McCoy, and she's staff to Representative Guerra. And she's just here with me to assist in answering any questions you may have after I give my testimony. I'm here today to present House Bill 128, an act establishing the Alaska Schools Physical Activity Task Force. First, I would like to touch on some points and statistics that are just some of the reasons we think it's important to establish such a task force. According to the American Obesity Association, more than 30% of U.S. children and adolescents are overweight or obese. Studies have shown that overweight children are more likely to become overweight adults with a variety of medical problems, including diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancers, and high cholesterol. According to a recent study in the Anchorage School District, 36% of Anchorage school students are either overweight or at risk of becoming overweight. The National Association of Sport and Physical Education recommends elementary school students receive at least 150 minutes of physical activity per week, and that middle school and high school students receive at least 225 minutes per week. The Center for Disease Control recommends at least 30 minutes of physical activity per day. With all of these known recommendations from experts, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Valdez school districts are requiring that only middle school students receive daily physical education. Elementary school students in these districts are receiving only 2 30- to 40-minute physical education periods per week. In the 4 years that students are in high school, they're required to take only in a year and a half of PE in order to graduate. The level of PE required in these schools is clearly lower than what is recommended by health education and health experts. This task force, if established, would be made up of school officials from both urban and rural areas, physicians, a member from the Department of Education and Early Development, and legislators. We do recognize that different schools have different facilities available to them for PE, and it would be up to this task force to determine an effective and economical way to increase PE within the existing school infrastructure. The task force will also look into whether new laws or regulations are necessary to provide more physical activities in schools and consider whether school construction requirements should be changed to facilitate more PE. Many other state legislatures across the nation have taken similar steps in addressing the problem of the growing number of overweight children, and Alaska should consider following their lead. Creating this task force would be a step in the right direction. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for hearing this bill today. There are a couple people online that would also like to give testimony, and I hope that either myself or others testifying will be able to answer them for you.
Thank you, Shalon. I'd like to announce at this time, too, that it is my intent to hold this bill We've just had it, this committee has just had a chance to start taking a good look at this. We have had an amendment offered by Representative Dara, so we can make sure that that's addressed fully, because I want to make sure that we do this right and give everybody a little bit of time. So the people who are listening on this, I think for the purpose of discussion right now, we can make sure we address all the people who have taken the times out of their life to make sure that they're at the LIOs to testify on that. I'd like to hear the testimony from online right now.
Should we address the amendment?
The amendment's not been offered yet. So right now we're going to hear in the off nets, we have Bonnie Sosa from Healthy Teachers. Are you out there, Bonnie? Hello, Bonnie. Nobody there? Jennifer App?
I'm here.
Could you please testify to HB 128? State your name and who you represent for the record.
Good morning, Chairman Newman and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer App. I'm the Alaska Advocacy Director with the American Heart Association. And I am testifying today in support of HB 128. I will keep my testimony very brief. I think that Representative McGuire's aide covered a lot of the statistics that are so important around childhood obesity. But one thing that I do want to highlight is the connection between childhood obesity and later incidence of cardiovascular disease. It is remarkable. There are new studies that have shown that children, young teenagers, are exhibiting the kinds of traits in terms of heart health that have typically not been seen until middle age. As our kids get heavier, we risk, for the first time in decades, seeing a shorter lifespan than we have seen. Typically every year our lifespan gets longer. Obesity is threatening that trend. We may actually see our children and our grandchildren live shorter lives, shockingly enough. This bill is a step in the right direction. We know that childhood obesity is caused by two major problems, the lack of physical exercise and poor nutrition. By taking a look at what we can do in Alaska to reverse the trend is a step in the right direction. Different schools will probably need different solutions, but to begin to proactively address this problem with a task force like this is an important way to show that the legislature cares about child health and that you recognize that obesity really is a serious problem. The disparity between schools in terms of, what's required in elementary schools, well, actually nothing is required right now in elementary schools statewide, and so districts are doing things district by district. But, a task force could really give the kinds of input and guidelines to elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools to improve children's health and make sure that kids are learning how to be active as children, because those lessons that are learned in childhood really do carry through into adulthood. I am happy to answer any questions, and thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Jennifer. Do we have anybody from our committee? Representative Gatto.
Jennifer, are you with the American Heart Association?
Yes, Representative Gatto, I am.
Thank you. Just a brief question. Are the children arriving at school already for the kindergarten beginning year, are they already obese, or do they get that way after they get there?
Well, some do and some don't. We see that there's a there's a trend that as children move through the school system, that they're monitored along the way, that kids tend to show that they're getting heavier percentage. Obviously kids are growing, but they're exceeding the normal weight limits as they move through the school system. But I think that there are percentages of children that are coming into school heavier, but the percentage of kindergartners that are obese or overweight is a smaller percentage than the percentage of eighth graders that are overweight or obese. Am I answering your question?
Yes.
Yeah, one more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
But I think some of the things you said are things that we would normally expect, that more kids are probably who are arriving obese are not likely, because of school, likely to lose weight.
Right.
I guess what I was getting at is, at some point, do we have an effect, anything resembling the effect that parents have? Is that maybe an area that the Heart Association is already active in dealing with, come on, folks, it's your kids that are overweight, you need to do something before they get to school? Or are we finding that, oh, well, once they get to school, we'll depend on school nurses, PE, and yelling by the teacher for them to lose weight? I mean, where do we put the responsibilities here?
Well, I think there are a combination of responsibilities. Certainly, parents need to play a big role. And again, you know, this childhood obesity epidemic is a two-pronged problem. Part of it is nutrition, and of course, that comes largely from home. And part of it is physical activity. The physical activity component, I mean, you can certainly encourage, and we do, encourage families to, you know, get out with the kids, take walks, use facilities in your area to stay active, you know, like in Anchorage, that would be the Coastal Trail, or, you know, Westchester Lagoon skating rinks. I mean, anything that you can do to be active with your kids is obviously a great step in the right direction. But with the decrease, a couple of trends have happened over the past couple of decades, and they've really accompanied this rise in obesity. One of those trends has been a decrease in physical education in schools. So as we've seen that PE requirement decline, we've seen childhood obesity increase. You know, certainly there are other factors that are responsible as well, but that correlation is out there. And, you know, we know that some kids, the only exercise that they're going to get is at school. The one other thing that I'd like to throw out here is that there is a pretty impressive correlation between physical activity in schools and a child's ability to learn. And so it may, you know, obesity is one big problem, but focusing elementary school kids, for example, elementary school teachers, some schools are cutting their recesses as well as cutting PE, and teachers are having a harder time controlling children who don't get outside and burn off some energy. There's sort of an improved ability to focus, and that's, you know, hearsay through teachers, but it's also through studies that show that kids really do learn better if they get out and exercise a little bit.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any more questions? Oh, we had one from Representative Wilson for you, Jennifer.
Jennifer, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jennifer, I know there's another correlation that runs right along with what your comments were, and that is that more families have TVs, and more families have TVs in their children's bedrooms even. And I think that I feel very strong that we cannot expect schools to be parents. And a good place to start is prevention, and that prevention really starts with the teaching the parents. Maybe the parents weren't parented in that way themselves, and so and since you're from the Heart Association, and I hope that you are very strongly promoting activities that teach parents maybe that they need to have the kids play outside instead of sit in front of that TV, and also that teach them about good nutrition, because I think a lot of them truly don't know.
Yes, Representative Wilson, I think you're right. I think that there is lots of room for education of adults, those programs are being undertaken by the Heart Association on a lot of different levels. We have several school-based programs that work with both children and their parents on issues of physical activity and nutrition. But it's, you know, in order to reach all children, some of the kids are not going to be able to, you know, benefit from those kinds of information that doesn't happen in the home. It just, you know, for whatever reason, isn't happening. To learn those kinds of physical activity skills at all the only place to do that becomes the school environment. And I completely agree that this problem is not, it won't be completely solved by improving physical education, but it will be a step in the right direction. You know, we teach our kids a lot of things in school, and one thing that if they're not getting it at home, especially, is an interest and a lifelong commitment to being in shape. I mean, I remember I played sports in school that I was never introduced to at home, and I have an active set of parents. But, you know, I would have never played softball, for example, had it not been from an introduction in physical education. I think that those kinds of stories are very common among children, even whose parents are active and are physically fit. So anyway, I do hope that this bill is not an attempt to, first of all, dictate to anyone how to raise their children, nor is it even an attempt to dictate to all schools a particular message. This bill is really about setting up a task force to figure out the best ways to improve Alaskans' physical activity. And again, that has a corresponding direct correlation to improving things like test scores. So, you know, I think that there's been this concern that, you know, we have to improve test scores in Alaska, so the first thing that gets cut is physical education. Well, you know, the more that we look at this correlation, the more that it's becoming very clear that you're actually shooting yourself in your foot if you cut all physical activity in the hopes that you're going to improve your math scores. We've seen, there's a new study out from California that shows that there's a very direct correlation between hours spent in physical activity and improving math scores. Anyway, the whole sort of mind-body connection is an important one to remember, and one that really, you know, when we think about sort of improving academically, that's where the schools really do play the only role. You know, if we can help our kids learn better by exposing them to physical education, I think that that's something that we really seriously need to consider as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to go to Anchorage and talk to Dr. Tim Wallstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Wallstrom. I'm a professor of education in the College of Education at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. I also sit on the boards of the Alaska Association for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. And I'm currently the chair of the Alaskans Promoting Physical Activity Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Alaska Take Heart Alaska Coalition. I'm encouraged by the introduction of this bill, and I hope it passes through committee and so the task force can begin its work. And I know that myself and the members that I represent are anxiously waiting to work towards coming up with some solutions to the problem we currently face in our schools and in our communities. It's when we promote physical activity, I know we tend to focus on physical education in schools, but we look at a lifespan model where we're hoping to encourage physical activity for youth through adults, including senior adults. A couple of points I wanted to make, however, relevant to physical education and the importance of physical education, certainly at the elementary school level where we teach fundamental movement skills. And currently, too many schools in Alaska do not have folks who know how to teach fundamental movement skills to kids. And what happens is that once they leave sixth grade, it's very unlikely that anyone's going to teach them what I consider a fundamental movement skill, such as throwing a ball. You've probably heard the old sexist expressions, throws like a girl or runs like a girl. And those are for folks who exhibit what we call immature motor patterns, who have not been taught how to run, have not been taught how to throw. And folks who aren't skilled or competent movers tend to choose activities which don't involve movement. And that is a very strong factor when it comes to choosing sedentary lifestyles, which is, of course, as you know, an important piece of the inactivity cycle, which leads to obesity and then to heart disease and diabetes and cancer. So as a proponent or as a person who promotes physical activity and active lifestyles, I want to say I'm encouraged by the introduction of this bill, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify for it.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions for Tim? Okay, how about Philip Petrie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Philip Petrie. I'm a volunteer advocate for the American Diabetes Association, Alaska affiliate, and I'm here today to testify in favor of this bill. And the American Cancer Society, the Heart Association, and the American Diabetes Association have developed a joint position statement on physical education in schools and with our youth. And I have type 2 diabetes. My wife has type 2 diabetes, and many of us that are in my age bracket often heard diabetes type 2 referred to as adult onset diabetes. And it was because primarily people that were getting type 2 were in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and older. And today we've seen a terrible trend in that it's now getting younger and younger, and many youth, and including as young as 4 years old, are now being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I have a great deal of information, but in the interest of brevity and the fact that Jennifer testified very aptly on this issue, I'd just like to say that we support it. We're here to help in any way that we can and provide support to the task force. And I do understand that it's not the sole responsibility of schools and that we can't give schools every responsibility that parents should have. But I recall from my youth in the old program called the President's Physical Fitness Challenge that we had that as a standard in our school. Everyone wanted to be a member of the President's team. And I think we need to bring that back in school. We've seen a terrible decline in physical education in our schools. And I think the priorities need to be redeveloped so that physical education takes a vital part in our schools, as well as in our home and after school. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Philip. Any questions from our committee? Thank you, sir. Peter Mias, please state your name for the record and affiliation.
I'm Peter Muse, MJOS. I wish to thank Representatives McGuire, Guerra, Wilson, and Dahlstrom for sponsoring this bill. I've been involved with this issue as a physician for well over 20 years. As a matter of fact, when I served on the Alaska Academy of American Academy of Pediatric Sports Medicine Group, we were successful through the 15th legislature in obtaining a resolution which in fact stated that the state strongly supported the whole concept of daily quality vigorous physical education grades K through 12. That was nearly 20 years ago. Here we are today. I was one of the originators of Take Heart Alaska, the state's cardiovascular disease prevention task force. I served for many years as vice president along with Dr. Wallstrom. I served on the American Heart Association's Northwest Region Advocacy Board. I've been a board member of American Circumpolar Society for Circumpolar Health. And I'm representing as well today the American Academy of Family Practice. I can tell you one of the reasons I'm involved in this and have been involved in this for so many years is that over the 32 years or so of practice, I've seen a steady deterioration of the health of children and the adults. We're now in about the fourth or fifth generation of adults who are completely sedentary and subsequently as role models, as parents. The physical activity levels of children has deteriorated almost to nothing, as I will try and demonstrate. I also have the support of Anchorage Superintendent Carol Como, who is unable to be here today, but who fully supports this bill. We are no longer merely in the grip of an epidemic. That's not hyperbole. That is the description from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But we are, in fact, besieged by what is now termed a syndemic, which is a crisis of health of even greater magnitude and breadth, the scope of which includes the devastating sequelae of obesity, such as diabetes type 2 and all of its perilous organ disintegrations, hypertension, dyslipidemias, and a cascade of cardiovascular inflammatory conditions. American adults are today 70% overweight or obese, and children are at least 30% obese or overweight, and these figures are, according to the CDC, exaggerated in rural Alaska. In weight management, it remains true. It is a matter of calories in and calories out. It is the calories out factor which HB 128 addresses. For obese children from even the earliest preschoolers, obesity, quote, dooms them, in the words of former Surgeon General Dr. David Satcher, to a life of illness and societal dysfunction from which recovery is nearly impossible, and their burden falls not only on themselves but on families and society at large. In addition to the metabolic syndrome previously noted, suffer a litany of associated diseases, including sleep apnea, and with it a profound loss of attention and cognitive ability, bizarre hormonal changes, severe musculoskeletal injury, and deformity. As adults, they will almost assuredly be at high risk for the development of various cancers, impaired immunity, depression, and numerous frequent illnesses, both major and minor, all in addition to the metabolic syndrome. Their health care costs will far exceed those of a fit society, costs so staggering that Senator Ted Stevens has said that soon these costs attributable to obesity will, quote, jeopardize our entire national economy.
Say, Peter?
Unquote. Yes.
Do you have this? I'm assuming you have written testimony you're reading off?
I do.
If you could just please send that to our committee, that would probably be better, and maybe just kind of condense what you have in there a little bit. And also the other people that have testified, and Emily, if you have written testimony, please send that to our committee. We will include it in the packet for future reference into future committees that this will be going through, I'm sure. But if you could kind of wrap it up, I would appreciate that for the sake of time.
All right.
You can wrap up your comments. I'll give you a little bit of time to finish it up.
Sedentary obese students suffer from a wide variety of disabilities, including feeling poorly, eating poorly, sleeping poorly, very risky behaviors, including disciplinary problems, substance abuse, and smoking. On the other hand, fit students will likely become fit adults with improved behaviors, less risky behaviors, the ability to learn. There's several studies now. Jennifer App described some. There are many now, including even nuclear magnetic resonance studies, which demonstrate that fit students, no surprise, this has always been something which we intuitively believe, but only until the last few years were we able to demonstrate it, that students who are fit have better performance all the way around in the classroom and in official sanctioned testing.
Thank you, Peter.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions? Thank you, sir. Right now we have Emily Neon.
Thank you. Chair Newman, members of the committee, my name is Emily Neenan. I'm the Alaska Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society.
And Emily, I don't mean to kind of
statement
cut you off,
that should be in your packet there, the one with the ACS logo on the top, that outlines our support, why we support this bill. I'll just touch on a couple points here. First is the fact, why is the American Cancer Society involved? Because one-third of all cancers are related to physical activity, lack of physical activity, and poor nutrition. That is the first key piece. The second thing I want the committee to know is that our support of this task force is only one of a multi-pronged approach at the American Cancer Society. We are working with communities, doing all sorts of different kinds of education pieces, on down to city planning, the whole gamut. And the final point I wanted to make is, why are we focusing on the schools? Well, because that's where the kids are. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily. Any questions from our committee? No questions. Thank you, Emily. This time I'd like to ask Kim Floyd from Matsubura to come up. She's got a little bit of experience, and we'll take advantage of her here to explain what the Matsubura is doing to try and address this issue.
Yes, if you need me later, I'll be out running, because after all of that, I feel like I need to go for a jog. This is an encouraging conversation, as MATSU schools are already involved in some of this at our level. We have a task force that is addressing the quality of nutrition in our schools. We are trying to bring in more locally grown produce and introduce that into our students' lunches. We're also just taking a look at healthier options to include making sure that what comes out of vending machines isn't more important than what goes in, which is the money. So we're trying to find a way to make sure that we have healthy options on site for our kids. Last year, with the increased funding from the legislature, and because we were growing, we were able to add PE back to middle school for every student every day. We know that they need that every day. Yeah. Now, we can't do that at the elementary school level, and I'm imagining this will be something, if the task force is created, that you'll have to take a look at, because we simply don't have the space. There isn't enough gym space nor enough time in the day to have PE every day for every child in schools. But again, we're addressing this at a local level, and we would appreciate guidelines. I hesitate to go beyond that and say mandates, because, as you know, we deal with many unfunded mandates that can pose some challenges. It's right now, fighting obesity is a community responsibility. The minute it becomes a mandate for schools, it's the school's responsibility alone. So we would like the opportunity to continue to work in our community as a task force in addressing what's right for our students.
Thank you, Kim. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I think what I'm hearing you saying is you would love to have the guidelines, but you don't want any mandates, especially ones that are unfunded.
If they're funded, they're wonderful.
doesn't happen all the time, does it? I agree with you. There's definitely a need. Obviously, we all just don't have to do anything but just look around, and we know that there's a need there.
Right. And we can appreciate, too, that schools have a corner on the child market. We are where it's at. However, we're also under increasing pressure to be accountable for the academic piece. Of course, the physical education is a huge piece of that. Our PE teachers, I'm very pleased with the level of professionalism of our PE teachers. They are on top of brain research that shows the importance of integrating fundamental movements not only into PE class but into the classroom. They're taking breaks to do what we would consider physical activity appropriate to spur learning. But guidelines are much better than mandates.
Representative Guerra and then Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to assure everybody in this room, the point on mandates is an important one, and the truth is that if you mandated a higher amount of physical education in every school district in the state, some school districts don't have the space to do that, some don't have the staff to do that, and so the approach of this bill addresses that and says what we need to do is come up with ideas from the experts in the community to figure out a way to help us maximize the amount of physical education we provide in the most efficient way possible. And so no mandates would come out of this bill. The bill would come out with ideas. It would come out with proposals. Right. And we've been very sensitive to the whole sort of unfunded mandate issue. So Representative McGuire and I and our staff and the Department of Education and Carol Como and others sat down and tried to figure out a way to move the ball forward without the mandates.
Thank you.
is it my turn, Mr. Chairman?
It's your turn, Representative Gatto.
Would it be safe to say that if we vote this affirmatively, a committee is formed, the committee will come back and say we need more PE, and then they will ask the schools to add more time for PE? Well, at the elementary school, we already leave the building two times a day for PE. Mm-hmm. What would an elementary school teacher say? Let's have more PE, and let me see, what will I remove from my curriculum? Would that be what would happen?
We have so many hours in the school day currently. We have lots to accomplish. And with the current school structure, yes, you would be displacing something. Yeah. But, you know, there's room to talk about extended learning opportunities, community schools, other programs that can help improve the physical activity of our students without solely relying on the 6.5-7 hours that we have kids in the classroom.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's really just to respond to the last question. I think that would be the wrong way to do it, and that's exactly what this task force is aimed at avoiding. You could certainly mandate that teachers do more PE in a way that displaces other coursework. That would be the wrong thing to do. And if you read the task force bill, the whole aim is to come up with the best ideas people who are experts in the area have to help us maximize the amount of physical education we're able to teach within the existing resources that we have. And certainly you could do it through PE coordinators, for example. Anchorage has a PE coordinator who visits the schools and says to the individual schools, this is what you can do within your own infrastructure to get kids out more often, for walks, for example. Because believe it or not, walking is healthy. Walking doesn't take a gym. Walking doesn't take anything other than a free period. There are things that you can do within your existing infrastructure, but the point of the bill is to ask people who know more than those of us at this table to give us better ideas and help us do this efficiently. And it might be that they decide that there's such a problem in the state that maybe we have to do something that requires money too, and they might propose ideas along those lines too. That doesn't mean we have to accept them, but the focus is to try and do things in a way that's efficient, in a way that we can work within our existing constraints to do.
I'd like to say that Representative Garrett brought up some very good ideas there. Do we have any more questions for Kim right now? Okay, because this topic, you know, this is one of those fun ones, you know. It's nice to have a fun bill come through here. We can talk about something like this, help the kids so much. It is my intent to hold this, and at this time, I'm going to adjourn this meeting so that we can all take a look at this bill, make sure that we can digest it, have a chance to talk with maybe some of the experts. We have their names, and we can address Representative Guerra's amendment at that time. So for now, we will adjourn and meet again Tuesday.